Hello, my name is Sarah Paul, and welcome to my episode of Black Women in Political Leadership. Today, I am joined by former Common Council President of the City of Albany, Ms. Carolyn McLaughlin. She has dedicated over 20 years to serving the people of her city. Enacting purposeful change has always been the heart of her campaigns. She has continuously pushed for the well-being of all members of the community through her ideas on infrastructure issues and affordable housing. Carolyn ran a tight campaign to be the first Black mayor of Albany, and although she lost, she became an inspiration to all of the local Black women, young and old. She has made her voice heard time and time again, never faulting in the face of adversity. Carolyn McLaughlin has offered an insightful look on being a prominent Black woman political leader of her town through a lens encompassing several decades, and I'm excited to have her join us today. And to better get to know you and your story, what was your upbringing like?
Well, I grew up in a family of 7 children and my mother and father. And so it was a pretty stable home life. I had the things that I needed and some of the things I wanted. You know, when you have 7 children, it's hard. But I never felt like I had that I lacked anything. I grew up in, you know, very happy with very hardworking parents, you know, who worked by the sweat of their brow. They weren't college graduates. They weren't even high school graduates. They had a strong work ethic and strong morals, and they instilled that in all of us.
So when did you first get into politics? What started this inspiration?
I think it was just volunteer work. I mean, prior to becoming a politician, I did a lot of volunteer work in the community, you know, be it with the Urban League, the NAACP, United Way, and then just community organizations. I did a lot of volunteering, and I just one day decided to take it to the next level. I bought a home, and that changed my perspective on how I viewed the city. And when the opportunity came to become a decision maker, I thought I'd just step out and try it.
So then, who was your biggest inspiration in your early career?
Well, I had an uncle who lived in California he was very active in politics in Oakland, California. Mm-hmm. I just watched him. I never participated. I never thought that I would be involved in politics, but something must have rubbed off on me. Mm-hmm. Just watching him, you know, give of the community. And I lived out there for 10 years, so I watched him. But then it was after I came back to Albany in 1987 and just began to work in the community. And I just watched people around me, such as we had an assemblyman here. He didn't live in Albany, but he was from Buffalo, Arthur Eve. Mm-hmm. I remember just observing him. I knew more about him than I did my own local politicians. Because he just seemed to care not only about Buffalo, but he cared about Albany, and particularly the people of color in Albany. And then as I began to be more conscious of politics, I observed Maxine Waters, Congresswoman from California. She made an impression on me from afar. And I remember during the Rodney King incident, there's a picture etched in my mind of her standing on a corner, and they were interviewing her, and her concern was that mothers had milk and Pampers for their babies in the midst of the rioting that was going on. Yeah, that just made an impression on me. So I followed her career, and so I tried to model myself after her. And then reading about Shirley Chisholm, and I guess when I was a child, it was when Shirley Chisholm ran for president in the 60s. I was a youngster. But knowing the stories of those women, I guess they sort of gave me some inspiration.
having those Black women political leaders, did they influence your policies?
Well, because for them, what I saw with them was always about the people. It's never about you. And I think most politicians, or at least I'd like to think, when they start out, it is about the people. But you have to maintain that thinking. Some people get, I think, jaded or begin to believe the hype and think it's about them, but it really isn't. So what I saw in their politics and continue to see in Maxine Waters' politics is, it's service to the people. And you see a need and you try to help fill it, because there are so many people who are marginalized and have historically been left out, not thought about. And they deserve to have somebody in the room at the table who is bringing their issues to the forefront and making sure that when decisions are made, their conditions are being considered. That's what it's about to me. Everybody has to be considered when a decision is made. When you're going to be a full purpose and all purpose community, you got to make sure that when you make a decision, it takes into consideration every neighborhood, every ethnic group, every demographic, from children to seniors. And sometimes that doesn't happen. So you have to have somebody in the room who has some sensitivity, or much more than that, a compassion for those groups, and feels like you want to work to make sure that their needs are met. And that's how I identify myself.
So during your over 20 years in office, what would you say is one of your biggest accomplishments that you've seen that has created a great impact on the community that you serve?
One thing is I have shown that someone can come from the community and have an impact on the community. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of youth services and educational services and affordable housing. These are issues that have been very important to me. And I've been able to impact, I think, quality housing being built at an affordable rate for people within the city of Albany. I also believe that I have been a voice of reason. Sometimes I can be very dogmatic in my approach sometimes because I think it's necessary. But sometimes people don't get it unless you are passionate about what you're doing. Some people misconstrue that because it makes them uncomfortable. But I'm okay with you being uncomfortable, because that means something's not right. And if it's my job to make you feel to squirm in your seat, then that means you know that there's something that can be done about the situation that I'm talking about. So I think I've been able to form, even with that, what I just described, I've been able to form relationships with people at all levels of government, and I can pick up the phone and call them, and they take my phone calls and listen to what I have to say. I stay focused on the issue. It's not about me. And when you stay focused on the issue, I think people are more likely to support you. And when you don't worry about who gets the credit and you're looking for results, then you're more successful. If I can partner with you, if you're smarter than me, I'm going to be smart enough to bring you on my team so we can get it done.
So being that Albany is predominantly white, were there any challenges that came with being a Black woman? Did you feel like your voice is always heard?
Well, not in the beginning, but I refuse to take no for an answer until you prove to me that you can't do what I'm asking, or you can't, or you don't understand what I'm asking. So I'm respectful. So there were times when I didn't feel heard, and I reached a point where if I felt that was the case, I said it. You don't understand what I'm saying, or you don't really hear me. So I didn't walk away very easy. I knew if I didn't make my point, nobody was coming behind me to make it. So there were very difficult moments, very frustrating moments, but I learned they all turned out to be valuable teaching moments for me. Rather than getting angry and taking my marbles and going away, I come back again. That's how I address the issue of you not hearing me the first time. I'll be back.
You previously mentioned Shirley Chisholm, and she is one of the Black women leaders that we researched in our class. We realized that her losing the presidential election wasn't truly a real loss for our community. Just seeing her impact, seeing her tenacity, her fortitude, and her going out and doing a real campaign for her presidency, it allowed other Black women just to have someone to look up to. So you ran an active campaign for becoming the mayor. So what impact do you think?
I think, again, it showed the community, much like what you just described, that, you know, a Black woman can do that locally. Because Albany is a difficult town politically. It's mm-hmm. a difficult town, period. Mm-hmm. But politically, it's very difficult. And I believe that it gave people a lot of pride that I ran. I mean, even young little girls helped me on my campaign, would see me on Facebook or see me on the news mm-hmm. and would tell their, and there was a couple young girls who were in like middle school and tell their parents they wanted to come and help me. And they would come and help on my campaign, work in my office. And that's what it's really all about, having that kind of an impact. So maybe one day one of those little girls will grow up and, you know, see, I knew a lady back when I was in the fifth grade who ran for mayor. And maybe that could inspire them to do something that they otherwise probably wouldn't have thought of. So I think it had a positive impact on the community. You know, I was someone who came from the community. I think that instilled a lot of pride in people, community pride, particularly people who were natives of Albany. Albany is a very transient city now. We have a lot of people have migrated into the city of Albany. Not the same city when I was a child, but to be able to move forward in such a venture like that as somebody who grew up here meant a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do it in a manner that showed respect for myself and my family, but also respect for the community and to deal with them at a level which enabled them to see themselves in me.
In one of the interviews you had with Dave Lucas, you mentioned how it was great to see the involvement of the community after one of the Black Lives Matter incidents. And in particular, you were excited to see how the youth was involved, but that your only disappointment was that they did not ultimately turn that anger into action as it relates to voting. So my question is, how would you say that activism has changed over the years from your perspective?
I think in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement, that it attracted a lot of younger individuals, and the millennials at this point, they began to do different things in the community. Even now, I see them in clusters and they're doing things to support one another. Mm-hmm. My disappointment remains that it has not translated into voting power in this particular community. I do see they have interest in some areas, education, economic development, climate change, mm-hmm. but they don't understand or have not connected. And criminal justice and community and urban violence, those areas are of interest to them, but they have not made the connection that they're political and economic issues and don't understand that. People make decisions every day, political decisions that affect each one of those areas. And if you're talking about starting a business in downtown Albany, you need to understand the decision-making that takes place in providing access to opportunity to do that. It's politics. And it remains frustrating to me. So that's a real challenge and something that I will continue to work on.
So people have said that this generation is very into performatory activism, posting on social media, using hashtags, posting videos. But again, they're not doing much after that. They're not voting as much. How has that changed in terms of years prior to this new wave of activism?
See, back in the day, before mm-hmm. Facebook, before the internet, before, you know, you having 1,000 friends that you really don't have. on Facebook, you can put a message out there quickly. But in this kind of work, people need to see your face. And so that when you put something on Facebook, it catches fire. But that's because they've seen you in the flesh. And you can't do one without the other. That's true. In this day and age, you got to have the technology. But I believe you have to have boots on the ground. You got to be in people's space and use the technology to help you get in a person's space. But I mean, you need to be there physically. Somebody needs to feel your presence. And that's why it's so important in politics. You have the key to winning is you got to knock on a door. You have to knock on those doors because you don't want people to say, well, nobody came to see me. People have to see you. They have to know that you hear them. And then they have to know that you are acting on what you've heard. So they got to see you in action. And they don't see you in action. They see a picture of maybe what you did where you were at an event or something. But you got to be there. You got to touch people. And as I said in a few seconds ago, you can't have one without the other. You need them both.
So in class, we also learned about several grassroots movements all across the globe that started and was fueled with the energy from Black women. So what impactful role do you think that Black women have played in specifically Albany's activism?
Well, most of the people that are involved in politics in Albany are women. And particularly in the movement, the people of color, it's 90% women. Women have led the way. They have. And just like it's the same trend around the country, women have led the way because we've been left out. When you have legislatures around the country and that are less than a third women, and now we're on the rise, because we got to change that. You were 51% plus of the population, and yet we're less than a third of decision makers. Something's wrong with that. So that light went on. And I think with women getting more educated, serving in the home and outside of the home, and they're taking their skills with them outside of the home, they're taking the lead. And at this point, men got to catch up. We have to catch up in terms of being put in position to make decisions. But mm-hmm. in terms of getting, stepping out there, taking that courageous move to run for office, because it does take courage to do it. You know, the women are taking the lead. And as you are probably aware, women, Black women in particular, in the last two presidential elections were the highest segment of voters. They voted 75 to 80%. Black women, eligible voters, voted. And those are trends that people are following. These presidential candidates, they're looking to Black women. You can no longer ignore that segment of society because they've proven that they can pull an election. What is the one that happened down in, was it North Carolina, where that man was running? And those women got on board and got behind the right candidate, Jones, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he was not expected to win, and he did, because they got behind him. So we have to continue that trend of taking mm-hmm. the lead. I spent a lot of time trying to develop female leadership because women lead differently. Women lead with compassion. Women lead without exclusion. Women lead from a win-win situation, not from one somebody's got to lose.
So as you said, it may be hard for certain women to be put in those places of power so that they can be the decision makers. In your own personal experience, were there any harsh critiques on your leadership? Did you see any biased treatment towards you that follow that trend of making it difficult to be a Black woman leader?
Well, I think because I've been in the game so long, people respect my tenacity and my perseverance. Mm-hmm. Initially, people might have thought differently, but after 20 years, and even, you know, didn't take the full 20 years, but I mean, people observe how you operate and mm-hmm. they respond, you know, because I have had people come forward and support me financially because of they watched how I make decisions. And so I do believe that it's always a challenge to make people see you for who you are and not what some preconceived notion they might have for you. But they got to spend time with you in order to do that. You can't just look at some picture or take some clip out of context of a conversation and think you know who I am. We need to talk. I'm a very funny person. I love to laugh. But when I have to be serious, that's where I'm at. But I love to have a good time just like the next person. But business is business. And And so often people, you have to just stand your ground, but mm-hmm. show the other side as well. And I do, and I think that I've been very good at that, in showing people more than one side to me. Yeah.
So what would you say then was your most challenging campaign or most challenging issue that you've had to fight for, and what made it so difficult?
There's so many. One is economic development issues are always difficult because mm-hmm. It's about money. And whether you're trying to provide jobs for people or whether opportunity for people to make money, that means you're taking money from somebody else who's used to making it. Mm-hmm. So when there have been large development projects here in the city of Albany, million-dollar projects, and we fought, like when we were building a convention center here in Albany, we mm-hmm. fought to try to make sure that there was equal distribution of opportunity to work on that project, either as a vendor, as a construction worker, as a professional tradesperson. It was very difficult. People didn't want to listen, but we stayed at the table. And I still, we came away not comfortable with the end result, because people fight very hard to hold on to a dollar. And if you have certain segment of this community that's used to making all the money, getting all the contracts, and here you come, you want to get some other people to get a piece of the pie, it's hard fought. But it's what's fair. And everybody is not concerned about being fair. People are concerned about making money. And so I just don't think people always, they don't always look at it from the same perspective. So that was very difficult. When you're trying to move economic empowerment in the community, that's the most challenging issue. And when you're looking at affordable housing, that's another area. Because like right now, there's a lot of housing development going on in Albany, but it's not affordable housing. And it's a national issue. And we are falling right into the trap of everybody, every other city around the country. We're moving or squeezing the middle, I can't even say middle income, I won't say that. Well, in some cases, even the middle income to low income person out of the urban community. Because now, those people who are making the big bucks, a lot of them want to come back into the city. So they're building housing that those people can afford, $1,200, $1,500 for one bedroom apartment. And you got three kids, what you gonna do about that? You can't stay there. And then you got deteriorating neighborhoods that they're not getting the same attention that somebody was coming in saying that they want to build a 200 apartments and it's high-end apartments.
So would you say that the current mayor is trying to tackle any of those issues?
Not the same way that I would have. And I think that there's a lot of gentrification being revisited in our city, and it's taking place right here too. And gentrification is a political decision. It is not something that just happens by happenstance where people just decide they're going to move. No, it's by design. The time you see a Starbucks coming in and you see bike lanes being put in the street, oh no, some decisions that were made years ago that some people got to go. Those things that I just named, those are just symptoms symbols of gentrification that is about to take over your community. And it's happening right here in Albany. So when you think about, okay, what happened in, I'll use New Orleans as an example, in Katrina, the floods, and moved all those people out. When they rebuilt Katrina, the people who were moved out could not afford to come back. And the people who were moved out, we could not afford to move back because the city was not rebuilt for them. That's gentrification. You look at Detroit. Detroit suffered from bankruptcy, but when they tried, as they're trying to rebuild Detroit, the people who, people lost their homes because taxes went up on a vacant building that people could not afford, could no longer pay the taxes on the house that they grew up in. So they lost their homes. That's gentrification. Somebody else came in and bought it for the taxes that you couldn't pay. So it's those kinds of things that, make my blood boil. And if you are in a position
to make decisions that affect those things, you got to do it to the best of your ability. You've got to do it so that there's the most positive impact for the most people. And that's what I had a desire to do as the mayor of Albany. But I didn't get that opportunity to do that. But I continue to do, you know, what I can.
As a final question, what's your vision for future activism in Albany? What would you wish to see happen?
That it become a topic of conversation in school, even at the in the lower grades, middle school. Teach young people how to advocate for themselves and make it a part of the curriculum in high school. We're supposed to be creating future leaders. Mm-hmm. They don't just happen. With all of the negative things that have happened, the gun violence around the country, it has grown up some activists, like the Parkland shooting. Those young mm-hmm. people, they're a prime example of what their voice means. This young girl, Greta, climate change young lady, yeah. Look at her. She's traveling all over the world. She's the person of the year. Time magazine. Come on. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's a lesson. We need to take a lesson from that. And locally, I'd like to see our young people. I'd like to hear their voices. Because so mm-hmm. it's a big issue of what do they want? Let them tell you what they want. And we have to listen. We have mm-hmm. to listen. So that's a big thing for me. Young people getting involved. Women listening and being active and understanding that you do have something to say. Mm-hmm. And what we got to do, I will always put that message out there that I want to hear from you. And I can't do what I do without strong people behind me. And those people come from the community.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Carolyn. Again, super appreciative.
I know sometimes I can, I don't know, but this means a lot to me. It means a lot to me. And I wish you all the luck. I hope it's helpful for you.
Oh, it's super helpful. But yes, thank you again. I'll let you go to your